So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardawar.
And reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's all about the Surface Duo and Microsoft's Xbox Series S and X. And, that's probably a little bit of a problematic lettering scheme for them. We got a lot of news around Xbox, but mostly, I think what we're most excited by is the Surface Duo review.
Hells yeah.
Which Sherlyn Lowe just posted on Engadget, and we can talk about it more.
Finally.
We can talk about turning it on.
Yes.
And all that, the fun stuff you would do with a modern device, right?
Fun stuff, sure. Sure, fun's the word for it, I guess.
Fun's the word for it.
Fun's the word.
As always, if you're enjoying the show, be sure to subscribe to the Engadget podcast on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere modern podcasts can be found. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. And if you're around Thursday mornings, you can check us out live around 10 a.m. Eastern as we record the show. We do some like behind the scenes Q&A, and we take questions. We show off devices, all that fun stuff. So you get some cool behind the scenes action if you join us there. So Sherlyn, the Surface Duo, it is finally here. The killer dual screen device from Microsoft. Who needs the Galaxy Fold when Microsoft is here with the Surface Duo? What are your overall thoughts? And I mean, you did not score this thing very high. So what do you think at this point?
I this is a tough one. I did not score this thing very high, I guess, compared to other devices that we review, but we generally also review like higher end, better made devices in general. But this thing scored
better made.
This thing scored 1 point more than the original Galaxy Fold, 1 or 2 points more, but and a lot more.
That's 73?
That was like 70. No, the original Galaxy Fold was like 70 or so. The ZTEX on M got like 69. But really, our scoring system is just more, it makes more sense if you look at our rubric. And
sure. And you scored this one a 73, which is not...
A 71, it should be.
That's clearly the
do
not
but,
recommend. 71, okay.
Okay. And
clearly in the do not recommend territory, right?
That's not what our rubric would say, but I think that if you look at it on a scale of 5 stars, it's like 3.5 stars. So it's not like a shining 4-star review. It's like there's a lot to be excited by and excited for, but it's not yet time to buy something like this unless you have a lot of money and you're a diehard fan. So that's like the general takeaway, right? I think I felt like I needed to do this review do this product service because it's everyone's been so excited about it, and I really kind of wanted to like it, because also when you review Microsoft product, the fans come at you if you say anything mean. So I was like, I definitely like had that in my head, but I have to also be fair and honest, right? And this thing, the hardware is nice for the most part, and the software is just, as has been the case for dual screen devices in the last few years, the software still needs so much work. I'm going to dive into that really quickly, but for the full details and the more detailed like impressions, you can check out our review that's already on Engadget.com, our review video, which I just want to shout out is a 3-way collaboration between me, Chris Velasco, our senior mobile editor, and Brian O, our video producer. It was like the first time I'd gone and worked with Brian in a long time, and V was
just
there
like
to
the old
shoot
times.
Photos. I know, yeah. It felt like, can I just say that like I forget how much work it is to do reviews on your own until I go and get help from someone else. Like in pandemic times, I'm doing everything myself. I'm shooting my stand-up, I'm shooting my photos, I'm doing the work of reviewing it and writing it, but I had help this time, so it was fun. It's nice to see some normalcy hopefully return. Anyway, so hardware here. Two 5.6-inch AMOLEDs connected together to form an 8.1-inch screen that's about like 1800 together combined in terms of resolution. Each of these panels is 4x3, so it's a little wide. And that wideness is one of the reasons it's like a little off as a phone. So this thing,
it's boxy, the
it's,
hold. Yeah.
Poof. Ma, yes. I approached this review kind of looking at the Surface Duo in all the different things it's trying to be. So first as a phone, and then as a tablet, and then as the things in between. And as a phone, do not use the camera. Just do not. Like,
it's a bad camera. Although it got better with you, right? They issued some software updates since I tested it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's supposed to be better?
Yeah. So what happens with the Surface Duo is that there's only one camera, and it's above the right display when it's opened up and facing you. But not everyone's going to take photos with it like that. Everyone's going to like fold it down and have the screen facing outside. So because of that, it needs like the Surface Duo needs to know which screen you're looking at to take a photo with. And so that's where the software comes in. The software needs to know where you're looking, and it just does not do that very well. And that's why Davinder was having a lot of issues, because it just wouldn't stay on. For me,
well, also it was just a bad camera. Like, for me, the awareness was there, but the camera sucked.
So the camera quality is not great. It works well enough in daylight, and so like blue skies, red buildings, whatever, all look good and sharp, but at night it's pretty garbage. And in a portrait mode, we took photos of Brian's dog, and she looked much cuter on my Pixel 4a, like, let's just put that way. Because the portrait mode's superior there. But yeah, no, the camera itself is bad, but the software, it's going to hold up anytime you want to try to get like something that's fleeting. So like your dog was just had his tongue out, and then you wanted to take a photo. That's not going to happen. Your kid was smiling, and then by the time you get the phone out, your kid will be crying. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And also, like, you have to factor in the time to rotate the phone if it's closed.
That's what it is. Exactly.
Too. Like, so there's so much friction in front of you're trying to do, unless you keep the phone open with both screens on both sides. And you could do that. I've talked to some Microsoft reps. That's how they've been using the phone.
Yes.
And it's perfectly fine.
Yes.
But it's still kind of annoying.
So, yeah, that's the thing, is that you're supposed to, I've been advised by friends in reviewer land also that, like, I was at first like, ugh, I can't see my updates on the outside screen because there's no outside screen. They're like, why don't you fold it all the way around? And I'm like, oh, okay. So I used it a while like that. It's better that way. And
I see Sherlyn listening to her reviewer friends and not me, because that was literally the first thing I told you.
No,
to
that's not what you told me to
in
do.
In my notes for it.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh no. Yeah. I will admit to not having actually read your notes.
No.
But anyways.
I sat down and I wrote Sherlyn a 2-page document based on my testing.
Do you think I had time after the Android review to do anything other than dive into this review? Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Also, Sherlyn reviewed Android, and we'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that later on. So anyway, that's one of the phone things, right? A good smartphone camera is almost par for the course these days, and it just doesn't do that very well. Then we have other phone things like making calls, and like that worked, I guess. I called Chris Velasco, and we were like, yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, you can hear me. Okay, great.
But it's not a good phone to hold up to your head,
right? It's not like so wide that my hand struggled to hold it up, but it felt a little weird. Like, it looks a little odd, but again, like, I mean, it's like,
it's very much, it is sort of like talking into a Nintendo DS.
Yes.
I think the DS Lite, in a way, because of the folding mechanism. And even though the screens are thin together, they're a little thick. The thing weighs over 0.5 pounds. I think the main thing for me,
well, like, I didn't feel like it was, I mean, yeah, it doesn't feel that long, that heavy. It's 250 grams, which is like, yeah, I guess that's over, it is over 0.5 pounds.
That's over 0.5 pounds. That
but
is heavy.
I didn't know, I mean, yeah. I didn't hold it up to my ear that much, because I guess most people take longer calls with earbuds. I don't know. But go ahead.
I think the bigger problem, too, is that even if you fold it over and you're just using one screen, there is no one-thumbed great interaction.
So yeah,
because it's so wide,
it's,
you need both thumbs.
Definitely, as a phone, it's so wide that it's a two-hand phone, and it's also. But I mean, there is one-handed typing on this, like on this Swift Key keyboard.
There is, but it's not great.
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. The one-handed typing, honestly, is fine. It's just everything else that's not typing on this phone mode is not great. So there's also
this,
that.
So the keyboard does this thing that I find really. They think it's really helpful, where if you have one side of the screen open, or if you have it folded open booklet mode, one-handed keyboards will appear depending on the screen.
Which has actually been pretty helpful for me.
It's fine, but I don't like typing with a single thumb like that. Like, it's still awkward. It's not as fast as one thumb typing on a normal phone, just because of the way your hands are held open. So I found that annoying. I had actually asked Microsoft if they considered like a halfway keyboard that was right in between both screens.
But that doesn't work because the hinge will eat up the keyboard unless they, I mean, they will probably have to build it in a split way.
You would have to be smart enough to go over both. That's
a sort of split keyboard, but it didn't look great for me. Anyway, I had no issues with the one-handed typing. I found it okay. The keyboard is a whole other issue we will get into. But that's all the main phone things, right? Whether you're trying to use it one-handed and taking photos or making calls. I think as a phone,
can we talk about some of the modes too, by the way?
Right, I'm about to go into the other modes.
Over the big thing. Yeah.
So as a phone, here's the wrap up. Like, it's fine. Yeah. It's nothing great, nothing terrible. As a tablet, it is to me pretty garbage.
And as a tablet, so this is what I mean. Like, we got a situation.
So as a tablet, we're opening up the screen.
You open it up all the way,
and you lay it flat so that it's flush 180 degrees. And then there are other modes where, like, you have it half folded. And I can get into explaining what each mode is in a little bit. So tablet mode, again, is when you have both screens side by side, and there's that hinge in the middle. And to me, that's the main reason why it's pretty bad, because that hinge eats up stuff. If you're not using SwiftKey or using any other keyboard, which you shouldn't, because no other keyboard understands this device just yet, you'll lose buttons that you can press, right? If you're gaming in this mode, there's parts of the screen you can't touch. So if there's like a character, like an objective that you need to hit that's in the hinge, you need to move around it. Reading an article, you'll miss certain letters here and there. And the hinge is big enough that you lose words that are like two or three letters long. So like was, is, as, those are gone. But again, you can...
I would say, by the way, like, it depends on how you're using it as a tablet, just because I think the hinge is very noticeable, right? It's there. You would never full screen video and watch it across both screens because that's insane.
Yeah.
It just looks bad. But I did really enjoy doing things like full screen the New York Times app, and, you know, holding the device like portrait style, like an iPad almost, and scrolling up and down and reading articles, even though there were sometimes things cut off in the middle, like, it, you just scroll up a little and you can still keep reading. So I actually like that ability to dive deeper into long articles and stuff. So that's
You can for sure do that. If you need a bigger screen because words are small and you need them to look bigger too, that's definitely helpful to have this orientation. For me, I've always enjoyed reading it like on one screen alone, so that's fine by me. But yeah, I mean, compared to the Galaxy Z Fold 2, which is something that a lot of readers and listeners ask us to do, is compare this to the Z Fold 2, because it's time to have this foldables versus dual screen debate right now, right? It's these two devices are coming out. I finally spent some time with the Z Fold 2 as well. So one app that I use a lot one app that I use to compare tablet mode in is Instagram. And on the Duo, Instagram just is like, no thank you. The hinge to me is really bad. Like, you imagine you're looking at a picture of a cute, like, what, a beautiful scene, or like globe wanderers or something is one of the things I follow.
So Instagram in full screen tablet mode, a problem. I didn't mind it in like the split, like, booklet mode, where
it's fine in the split book mode. We'll get to that in a little bit, but in this tablet mode, Instagram does not look great. But on the Z Fold 2, this is what I'm trying to get to, which is on the Z Fold 2, there's no hinge. Instead, there's a little crease, and that's fine, so pictures look better. But Instagram is so bad at understanding, and maybe this is an Android problem, but Instagram is so bad at understanding what the screen size is, that it actually, instead of taking up the whole screen, it shows the phone version, which is the long version of Instagram, and then the background, the rest of the two sides are flanked with blank space. So
the fundamental problem with both of these is that Android stinks for tablets, and this is why the entire Android tablet market has kind of collapsed, aside from the super cheap stuff like the Fire tablets and the really high end Samsung stuff, which is their custom software.
And
really
we're seeing a resurgence in lower cost Android tablets. So I don't know, maybe Android will feel the pressure to improve its software. I mean, it looks like it's working with Microsoft to do some improvements here.
It's been 10 years.
It has been forever. And I'm not trying to defend Google, because I do think they have a lot of work to do on this mobile OS and encouraging developers to improve their apps and the experience overall. But also, when you say things like you like reading the New York Times full screen, you're also like, I like this experience. You know what I mean? Like, there are things that you're okay with that I wouldn't be okay with. So I think that it really depends on what you're going to use it for too. But anyway, tablet mode.
Can we take a step back, by the way? Like, so you did phone mode, tablet mode. Those are things we know. We know how to use devices like that. I feel like this device, the real calling card is that it does things nothing else has really done before. So there's booklet mode where you're holding it open.
First, I wouldn't say no one else has done this before. Everyone that has made a dual screen phone has done something like this, a sort of multitasking mode. But okay, so the two other there's two or three other modes you'll really use this in. One is book mode when you have the screens sort of folded and you're running two apps side by side. And they're taking up, each app is taking up one regular smartphone screen, or, well, regular meaning 4x3. And then that's the book mode. And I like book mode a lot, and we'll get into why I like book mode a lot later. But then if you wanted to go an overview into all the modes that are coming, if you flip this book mode into horizontal landscape, that's laptop-ish mode, which to me is garbage, again. And I'll tell you why again in a little bit, but mostly because the keyboard experience is really bad. Then if you fold the screens outwards halfway, you get a more traditional tent mode, which we've seen on like convertible laptops, we've seen on other dual screen phones as well, where both screens are facing out and you can prop it up on, say, an airplane tray table. This is good for like watching videos on the 4x3 inch screen, which is really nice, by the way. But my favorite mode turned out to be with intent mode, but instead of propping them up on the edges, I actually used one of the screens as a base. So like, I put one of the screens facing down and the other screen kind of facing me. I used this, one of the side effects of reviewing a Microsoft product, which I tweeted this out already, is I've become incredibly addicted to solitaire. Like, it's a problem. But I used this mode where it's half propped up to play hours and hours of solitaire, and it felt
this is true, Lynn playing bad games on airplanes.
Yeah.
Backseats all over.
I miss bad airplane games so much that I got,
so you recreate the experience. Let me just say, like, there are a couple of things in booklet mode. I really enjoyed having like Twitter on one side and the New York Times app on the other, where I'm just not staring and doom scrolling my Twitter feed. Like, I'm actually being productive and doing other stuff and seeing what's happening on Twitter. And it's that sort of multitasking that's interesting to me and exciting. But yeah, it was still super buggy. I know you had issues with software problems.
So,
right, and it seems like every reviewer did.
Again, yeah, like I said, this is something that a lot of dual screen, even the Galaxy Z Fold 2 can do this. You can have two apps side by side and interact. And yes, I really liked book mode. Book mode is the one thing, the one shining thing about the Surface Duo. You know, I did things like, the Vinterest at Twitter on one side and whatever else you want to do on the other side. In this mode, though, you want to be careful. If you have a video that you want to play, play it on the left side, if that's okay for you, because the speaker is on the left side. There's only one speaker on this thing. So if you're playing a video on the right...
it sounds bad, too.
It sounds, it's loud, great. But it doesn't have great quality. The video, if it's on the right and the sound coming from the left, it feels a little jarring to me, but it's not a huge deal. Now, with these two apps side by side, you can do a lot of things concurrently, which is nice. Twitter while watching videos, or for me, it was like watching a YouTube video and like noting down timestamps on the other screen, which is nice, right? Because I wanted to make notes for our editors or something. The best thing that Microsoft has done is to enable drag and drop. Drag and drop is something that will be very helpful for people who are doing a lot of like, I don't know, referencing of certain articles or doing a lot of research as they're going along. It only works on Microsoft apps for now. So like To-Do, Word, Edge, and all of that stuff. I've never used Edge as much as I have in this review, by the way.
And Edge, by the way, doesn't even perform that well. Chrome scrolled a lot smoother and just worked a lot better. But Edge is the thing where, you could take
built-in
text,
features.
Throw it over to Word.
I will say some of the features that Microsoft built-in Chrome also offers as well, like opening a link in another window on the other screen when it detects it's empty. Chrome also sort of does that in a similar way. So, you know, maybe Google will update Chrome to work better with the Duo. But yeah, so drag and drop, when I spoke with Microsoft, they were like, oh yeah, apps have to set their, developers have to set their apps as targets for both dragging as well as dropping before it will work. So it sounds like developer support needs to come, and I don't know if it's going to come. They've had 1 year to get developers on board, right? They announced it and they were like working with developers for a year before releasing this. And still there's not a lot of apps that work with this feature. So that's kind of weird. But book mode is otherwise great. And the hardware is so nicely weighted that it's actually very easy to hold with one hand, two hand, however you want to hold it.
It's like perfectly weighted. I think the way we described it in the hands-on, it feels like the way, you know, knife makers really balance it.
Yeah, I saw you wrote that.
Like, it's well balanced on both sides. And Microsoft was talking to us they really have to think about the hardware, right?
Like, yes.
That's why there's no NFC.
Yes.
That's why there's no
headphone jack.
What else? Wireless charging, yeah, and headphone jack too. Well, headphone jack, it's too thin to even have, yeah, the headphone jack.
It's definitely
anywhere.
Too thin.
But if they put in a coil for NFC, that would add weight to one side. Yeah. So they have to balance it to another. And there's a lot of stuff. I'm sad it doesn't really have dust proofing or waterproofing.
Yeah, there's no
IP
rating.
Because apparently they couldn't seal the hinge.
It's, yeah, sad. So anyway, book mode we've established is pretty good. The other things are, I also talked about like the tent casino mode. The last thing is laptop mode. Well, not really the last thing. You can use this in any variety of ways. Laptop, yeah, mode, yeah, is just bad. A, I don't like touchscreen keyboards for like a laptop style typing experience. But B, the
when you're away, so you're describing putting it up, one,
yes,
screen up, one screen flat on the table, and like having the full keyboard in front of you.
Yep.
If you don't have a computer nearby, that's not a bad way to type a long email, but it's not, yeah, not something I would use for
I
deep
sooner
work,
do
right?
two-handed typing, because on this,
right,
on this,
right,
5.6 inch screen, even that sort of touch typing is not great. I tried even using two finger, mm-hmm, typing rather than my usual typing, and it still was not good. So, okay, so in this mode, never mind the typing experience being not that great. The apps just don't understand what the hell is going on when you do that too.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah,
like I am watching I'm watching a video up top on the monitor type screen, and then on the base screen I am trying to type a message to a friend. Anytime I try to like input text on the bottom screen, either, mm-hmm, the app completely takes up both screens and like clears my video up top, or the keyboard covers the bottom app entirely. So I can't even see what the hell I'm typing. And in some cases, like when I was trying to log in to Google Drive on the bottom screen, the keyboard appeared, covered what I was typing. Never mind. I was like, I remember what my password or my username, I'm going to type it, mm-hmm, in. Clear the keyboard afterwards. It didn't type anything into the field. And I repeated this like 3 times. I was like making sure I definitely hit the input field. I definitely hit the letters. I definitely hit return and enter. Nothing would freaking work. So it's still definitely like,
yeah,
finicky.
Yeah.
And speaking of finicky,
this is what we say about first gen products,
yes,
by the way, is even when they're cool, even when they're super seem exciting, never buy first gen
products.
It's
$13.99. I mean,
there's so much.
Don't.
So where do you, yeah, where do you land on that, Sherlyn?
So
should anybody buy this? Should they wait for sales? What's up?
There are some people that will buy this regardless. I know that,
yeah,
there are people who have already pre-ordered it, because those are the people that will buy it, right? You're already that hype for it that you're going to pre-order it. Mm-hmm. And my biggest issue for other people is that like the software is far from finished. It's Microsoft, even when I was talking to them, were like, oh, we're planning monthly rollouts of updates to fix a lot of these issues. And some of their updates have been effective, but there's just, mm-hmm, there's just a lot you'll have to put up with. And if you want to pay $13.99 to put up with a lot of crap for a device that,
yeah,
will most likely not be your main phone or your main device, this is really more like a tablet, so it's like a secondary device, then yeah, sure. If you have the patience and the money and the time and, you know, tolerance for clutter, do it. But everyone else is not going to benefit from buying this. So I think that's right.
How does this make you feel about the Surface Neo, which is the slightly larger Windows version of this concept? I'm still interested in seeing what they do with it.
I feel like you have more experience than I do with dual screen Windows devices, like the Asus, like the ZenBook Duo things. I don't have any faith in Windows being a touch-friendly dual-screen software, but I think the hardware will be nice. Yeah.
I think it'll be interesting just because, yeah, they are also, they have the like hideout keyboard.
Yes.
That's going to be a part of that, like the keyboard case. I'm intrigued by it, but mostly I love to see companies playing around with hardware like this, even though it's not something I think anybody should buy right now.
Yeah.
The fact that they're experimenting
here.
Remember, the Surface RT, was a piece of garbage, but the concept was good. And over time, I feel like they got to a really interesting point with it. So I'm intrigued, and certainly more intrigued than other folding phones.
I will definitely say that the Neo's slide out keyboard case gives me a bit more hope that it will actually be a good laptop mode kind of device. And
yeah,
it might actually be pretty nice. So I can't wait till you get to test it and let us know like what that experience is like. Maybe I'll buy that. I don't know.
Okay, enough about dual screen phones. Let's talk about, I don't know, some big honkin' console hardware. This week, we finally got the launch details of the Xbox Series S and the Series X. Well, first of all, Microsoft confirmed that the Series S existed after a bit of a leak earlier this week, which I don't know if that was planned or not, because it certainly like spurred on excitement from a lot of people. So like, what was it, Monday night or Tuesday night, we had learned that, you know, the Series S leaked out, it exists. it looked like a very small thing. The price leaked out. It was $299. And eventually Microsoft confirmed everything. So the Series S and X are launching on November 10th. And the Series S is $299. So to me, that is super interesting, especially more as we learn more about what it can do. Because we've been talking about this Xbox Series X for a very long time. The Series S is an entirely new beast. So joining us to discuss all this is our UK bureau chief, Matt Smith.
Hey, thanks for having me on again. Yep, I promised to behave this time around. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
I don't know. Actually, like, I'm doing okay, Matt, but I just realized I just invited the world's biggest Sony PlayStation fanboy like, to talk about the Xbox.
On the BBC, they call this balance, That's the funny thing. So, like, this, you know, I'm one of these people that kind of has to be won over. I mean, I'm not blind. Yeah. This is like a bargain.
Wait, so then I'm the control group, right? Because I don't know anything about either. Like, so
I don't know.
You're the solitaire fanatic of the joint.
I want the Nintendo Switch. No, but I do. I mean, that price $299 for the Series S sounds really good, and I'm intrigued. I might buy it. But what do I get for that price?
Well, let me run down. So the Series S is a device targeting 1440p at 60 frames per second, which is, that's notable because I think like the Xbox One X, which is the highest end Xbox One that they launched, that was really good for 1080p at 60 FPS. Sometimes it got up to 4K, but 1440p, 60, that means really sharp resolution. Some 1440p monitors out there, this will be really good for. But for people with older TVs and even with people for people with 4K sets, 1440p upscaled to 4K still looks pretty damn good. And 60 FPS means it'll look smooth on most screens, but also it supports up to 120 frames per second. So for the newer 4K sets with higher refresh rates, like the new LG OLEDs, you'll get even smoother gameplay. And to me, that's really impressive that they managed to squeeze this amount of hardware in there. It uses the same super fast SSD technology that the Xbox Series X is going to have. It has most of the things you'd want from the Series X. There's even hardware ray tracing, although I can't imagine they can really do too much with that tech at such a low price point. But it has so much. And I think for most people, you'll notice faster load times because of that hard drive. You'll notice smoother gameplay because you're actually hitting 60 FPS and not like some weird 30 frames per second 1080. So I think for a lot of people, this is going to be a good upgrade. Matt, what do you think right now? Because this is competing with the PlayStation 5. And the only, we know there's going to be a disc PlayStation 5, the full one, and discless, but they're still basically the same.
Yeah, they're still going to have the same graphical hardware inside. That's what's so intriguing here. They're two very different propositions from Xbox. And I'm going back to really basic things here, but I really like how the Series S looks. Like, it looks like some kind of European speaker electronics thing that plays CDs or some other yesteryear physical media. It looks really attractive.
Sure,
I really like it. I think like it looked really nice, like on my TV table console stand thing. It's very attractive.
It looks like
looking
a fan.
And although it does look like a drive-through
speaker.
Yeah.
It looked like a system with a solar panel on top, which give me infinite sun power gaming.
Oh, wouldn't it be cool if you could string them together like two Series S's equals a Series X or something. Anyway.
Ooh.
That's the future. That's where we're headed. But yeah, Microsoft showed off like this thing is basically half the size of a Series X. It looks like it's a cute little thing. They're calling it the smallest Xbox ever made. If you look at the controller even next to it, it looks like basically the width of two Xbox controllers, not even two Xbox controllers. So it is, it's impressive. And I'll just say like for that price, $299 for essentially a next-gen experience. That's impressive because really it's only Nintendo that's been hitting that and their hardware like the Switch. The Switch isn't like the fastest hardware around. What was cool about the Switch was the portability and everything. So there's that. And also this is going to be part of Xbox All Access. So in 12 countries, you can basically lease this over 2 years. And it's $25 a month. But that includes Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. And we're going to get really confusing here. And Game Pass Ultimate brings in, that normally costs $15 a month. And that includes the Game Pass game subscription service, but also Xbox Live.
I think I'd either gone to bed or checked out mentally from work by the time that the pricing of the financing. I didn't know it included Game Pass. That's
the whole point, right?
Does it have Does it have to include Game Pass because there's no discs with it, or like what?
Well, okay, so yeah, this is a discless machine. It doesn't have to include Game Pass, but I will say, as somebody who's been, I did that crazy deal a couple of years ago where you could basically pre-order ahead 3 years of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. It is worth paying for it because it's normally it's $15 a month. You get over like 100 games to play. Yeah. And if you're like me, you can't always like find time to play the newest games. It's really nice to just have a library of good games to jump into. Also, every new Microsoft game, so everything, the Halo, Forza, whenever a new Microsoft game launches, it is on Game Pass. So at one point, I thought to myself, why am I paying $60 for Forza Horizon 4, right, or 3, I forget which one it was. Why am I paying $60 for that when that could pay for 4 months of Game Pass and I'll have the same game? Yeah. And I think that's the value proposition there. And that's more valuable to Microsoft than just people buying consoles, because that's consistent membership. That is, you know, that's somebody who's going to be paying for years rather than buying a thing and walking away, maybe buying one game like people used to in some consoles. So I know there's a ton of value here. Matt, any further thoughts, Sherlyn?
I might buy it. I don't know. I'm thinking I might buy it because it's affordable. It's only $100 more than my Switch, more or less. And it's that Xbox Game Pass thing sounds like a good way to try more games for me, because that's one reason I don't try a lot of games on the Switch, is because each of them are $50. I'm just like, what the hell? So I don't know. I'm intrigued, but maybe I should wait for a PS5. I don't know. Matt, convince me, Matt.
I don't.
So yeah, Devendra, why are you anti PlayStation then for the next gen?
I'm not anti PlayStation. I just think it's fine. So here's the thing. I normally end up getting both systems, so nobody can say I'm a fanboy for one thing.
That's the thing, though. But I think that's the crux of the matter, though, isn't it? Because you kind of, I get the Xbox is a bargain, and then with the game, you know, with Game Pass, it makes so much sense on so many levels. It makes sense for Microsoft, because they're getting, like you said, sustained income. And for gamers, you get so many games, like you get them on launch.
So many games.
But if you think of like the most amazing games, I'll give Microsoft Flight Simulator, but barring Flight Simulator, everything else that's been exciting, arguably in console gaming, like again, ignore Nintendo, but all the big hitters have been PlayStation 4. Like,
well, so it's, they're doing very different things, right? Like Sony, I think, has banked on the big budget, huge profile games. Last of Us 2, right? The Uncharted series, Spider-Man, God
Ghost
of War.
Ghost of Tsushima, like, Sony Final goes Fantasy 7, Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are like...
Sony goes big.
Devendra in Slack earlier, I think earlier this week, he said, what, is there not enough anime games for you, Matt, on the Xbox? And I was like, well, that's kind of true, yeah. But the main thing is just give me one it's ninja. Totally, I mean, just give me a game that kind of tickles my fancy on the Xbox. And... yeah, I mean, the Series S just looks like such good value. And a quick point I would like to make, isn't it amazing that perhaps in 2021 we'll have a new Nintendo Switch that will cost more than a current generation Xbox? Oof. Isn't that weird?
Ooh, that'll be... I do feel like Nintendo, even if they do release a new Switch next year, it would still be $400-$300. Like, yeah. I feel like they would stick with that rather than go higher. But
same price.
Because also their hardware is always like at least a generation behind. So the stuff Nintendo buys is cheaper and not as... you know, not as crazy pricey as what Microsoft and Sony are doing. I'll say, yeah, to your point, Matt, like I turn on my PlayStation when there is that big game to play, like when I want to go through Spider-Man, when I want to go through God of War. But I do spend most of my time back in the Microsoft ecosystem, because Xbox has a lot of indie games that I often end up jumping into because I like to spend time in Game Pass. I don't want to just go, I don't buy too many new games because it's expensive and it gets crazy. And I also have a PC.
Yeah.
And I think Game Pass becomes even more of a value on the PC side, because Game Pass Ultimate includes Game Pass for PC, which has some games. I think, what was it, Crusader Kings 3, which people are really hyped into right now. That's a hot new game coming out. The PC gets that stuff as part of the Windows Store, as part of Game Pass. So there's just a huge value there. And that's kind of where I like to spend a lot of my time. But I will say, like, I'm not down PlayStation 5. I do think the game of chicken both of these companies have been playing has been kind of weird.
It's because, unprofessional, I think, for us as journalists.
It's a little iffy. I mean, there's a whole new console here that just exists now this week, even though it's launching in 2 months. That is kind of wild to me. So Sony's pricing, I think, is really where a lot of my judgment on the PlayStation 5 is going to come in. I don't think they can go past $499, especially since we know the hardware underneath it, even though it's very similar to the Xbox Series X, it is not as powerful as the Series X. So they, I can't see how they could justify costing more. The real question is where the discless PlayStation 5 is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be like at most $50 less. I can't imagine they would say $400 just by
getting. If they manage to or wanted to sacrifice and hit $350 with a discless, then that's a win for Sony. But yeah. I mean,
this is the company that launched the $600 PlayStation 3.
But then they learned their lesson for the PlayStation 4. You know, I wonder like how much wiggle room now they know the Xbox price. How much wiggle room does Sony and PlayStation have? I mean, that's something like just some high-powered execs.
I think they're all going to be losing money at this because we've been looking at this hardware for a while. We just saw NVIDIA's RTX 3000 GPUs get announced. We know AMD stuff isn't coming. Based on what we know so far, the Xbox Series X's hardware to do that in a PC, like to get a next generation SSD, the SSD alone will cost you $200. You know, a good GPU will cost you at least $300 or $400. So once you put that PC together, that's a $1,000 machine. It is certainly impressive to get that amount of power within a $500 console. So the hardcore gamers, that's where they're going to go, is the $500 machines. I think for everybody else, the $300 Series S, that thing is just a crazy good deal. You know, especially as people are out of work or they don't have as many hours as they used to. If you want a new system for your kids, it makes so much sense to just spend $25 a month, get this console, get a whole bunch of games, so you're not always constantly.
I mean, Sherlyn, you might be the right example of the kind of person now that you're kind of getting into your gaming.
I mean, yes, for Game Pass, yes. But I was going to ask you, Matt, like, what titles from either the Xbox or the PlayStation libraries do you think I would enjoy?
Well, Fall Guys.
I don't play a lot of first-person shooter
type
games.
No, nor do I. Fall Guys is on both, I think, right? You can play it on Xbox, but it came on PlayStation Plus.
So I don't want to be dumb and be like, what's Fall Guys? I know the name,
right,
and I know
so
its hype.
It's amazing. It's like, God, I sound like the cliche that we like. You like to joke I am. It's like a Japanese game show. You run at things. Oh. Like, it's like 60 players. I think 60 players are all plonked at the front of a racing line. And then it's like an obstacle course. But all you can do is really
like
jump.
Like the American Gladiators show.
A little bit, but even lamer. You're just like this little jelly bean. You really can't do much. You can jump, you can run, you can kind of dive.
Oh,
but
God.
The dive is pretty much useless.
Okay. But can I play that on something other than the Xbox or PS4 or whatever?
Yeah, play it on PC. On PC. I think it's on Steam.
So I would just play that on my PC. Yeah,
I mean, it's the kind of, they could definitely do it on Steam. It came from Devolver, so we played it like I think 2 E3s ago.
There's a PC release. I will say, like, the integrated graphics in newer laptops or something, you could play a simple game like that pretty easily.
I'll wait till I'm done owning League of Legends, then I'll move over to Fall Guys.
Once I've finished League of Legends, once I've just completed it.
No, it doesn't. But once I like ace all my enemy teams all the time, then we can talk about
that's
this.
Ever gonna happen. But yeah, like Fall Guys is a good one.
Wow.
I'm trying to think what games we would like.
Exactly. That's my point. Is like all the titles y'all listed out aren't titles I'm interested in. So
but
maybe I won't.
With
buy
Game Pass, you have this back catalog. That's the benefit. Like old games that you
can I play Barbie Detective Mysteries.
There are things like that. But you have a Switch, right? And I feel like if you just want indie games, the Switch is like, Fall Guys is going to be on the Switch eventually. Like, the Switch
That's
can
true.
Do most
That'll be a lot
things.
Of fun.
So
there's no Overcooked.
You're fine with the Switch.
All I want to do is play Overcooked. That's what we've established.
And Solitaire.
That. And Solitaire.
Apparently. Wow. Matt, any closing thoughts on this? I feel like I'm excited by it. I want to see how Sony
responds.
I am
just really impressed. I'm really impressed. I think Xbox has come out really strong with all of this. Like, one thing we didn't...
Even though Halo's delayed,
I don't care about
right?
Halo. So, I'm not a white teenage American. I do not care about Halo. Well, I'm white, but you know what I mean.
Well, I will say the past three Halo games have also been a complete waste of time because I don't think 343 has done as good a job as Bungie did with that series. So I'm not. If it's delayed, fine, but that is a big hit for Microsoft.
Quickly, I'm not sure if you have a fact check klaxon noise you can throw in, Ben. But yeah, Fall Guys isn't on Xbox. Steam and
so maybe
PS4.
That's why that's I should consider the PS instead or see if it's on PC.
It's definitely on Steam.
Just wait and get it on PC.
What's my other final closing thoughts? Yeah, like the ball's in Sony's court now. But yeah, Xbox just like came out with this really pervasive pitch. And one thing we didn't quite mention about Game Pass is EA Play.
Oh yeah,
yes.
EA Play. 100 more games. Also, we didn't mention xCloud, which you could play your games
like
on
Stadia,
Android devices.
I mean,
yeah, that's true. Actually, Sherlyn, you could just subscribe to Game Pass and play xCloud games on
That's
all your Android devices.
I was thinking that was going to be my Matt life hack for this, was going to just play it on a Pixel or something.
Yeah, there are a ton of gaming phones that I could probably try it
You
out
don't
on.
Need it.
No, you don't even need a gaming phone.
You want
phone.
A proper controller.
Streaming.
No, but what I mean is, I don't know if, I guess a flagship phone would be good enough. That's true. The Note 20 Ultra.
You could get a super cheap, crappy, like the Pixel 3a or even the Pixel 2, as long as it can stream video.
For real, like game when they launched...
And the latency is fine?
It should be. I mean, when they launched the Stadia, like the press kit included, the Stadia controller, little bracket, and a Pixel 3a. So you know that's literally the bare minimum hardware for Stadia, so xCloud will be...
That's how it goes. Next year is going to be really wild for gaming, so I'm excited. It's not just about having the fastest hardware around. I think that's a good thing for consumers all around.
Yep. It's really good for phone networks like our parent company, Verizon.
Oh, good lord, he just has to say that.
Ka-ching.
We need a chime to Ka-ching. Play every time
Matt
say.
Gets a bonus.
Wait, that's NBC.
Can you hear me now?
So this week we had Android 11 review go up, Surface Duo reviews go up, Xbox news drop as well. But as if that wasn't enough, Apple was like, here, let me drop some news. So Apple,
sure, why not?
Yeah, sent out invites for its virtual event. It will be happening September 15th. And the graphic that they sent out with the invitation, which usually is a hint as to what is coming, has the words "time flies" on it, and then some squiggles in the background. So everyone,
I wonder what that could be referring to.
We wonder what "time flies" could mean, but I mean, it seems pretty obvious we might be expecting an Apple Watch, which to me is interesting because the watchOS 7 is still in beta. WatchOS 7 was introduced earlier this year, I think in June. Wow, that feels like forever ago. But now we're going to get new hardware, it looks like. So it'd be interesting to see what Apple brings to the table here. Matt, you're an Apple Watch user.
I am. I'm wearing mine now. I've got my Mandalorian strap on. It's kind of Mandalorian.
Oh, boy.
Ooh, that sounds good. I need a new strap.
But yeah, I'm on the WatchOS 7 beta, so I'm glad you mentioned it because...
Like
the sleep tracking, everything sleep based is really good. So before, when I'd wear my Apple Watch either in bed before I took it off to charge, if I wore it, then I'd be listening to podcasts, kind of try to wind down, right? And if you move your arm, the digital bezel, the crown will rotate, and then suddenly it'll ramp up the volume to the max and just give yourself a heart attack. Now when it goes into kind of go to bed mode, it kind of locks down the dial, so it doesn't. The screen doesn't unlock, the volume doesn't change. So it's lots of little bits like that where it's making more sense for me to wear the watch in bed. Obviously, the Apple Watch charges really fast, so I'm not really missing, the issue of recharging it in the morning isn't a bad thing. I can just do it when I'm popping out to the shower and brushing my teeth, and then it's pretty much always ready for me to wear. And also, it's work from home, so, it's a different life now. Charging your gadgets is completely different.
It's not as important.
It's just completely different, the whole use case. And the sleep tracking, I'll just wrap up the sleep tracking part.
Yes, do it.
Yeah, so I haven't really learned much from that, but that's true of literally all sleep tracking. The one thing that is making my sleep better, though, is the alarm, the Apple Watch alarm you can set.
It's gentle.
Yeah, it's so gentle and relaxing. Like, my body is now tricking itself into believing I'm waking up naturally because I can't feel it.
Does it buzz and vibrate slowly?
It's like a parent going, come on, it's time to wake up now. But
you have very different parents.
Let's get some ASMR wake up. I have been using in the new iOS, which iOS is it, 13 now?
14
the beta?
Is the beta, I think.
Yeah.
I think
14, yeah. They have the same wake up features, and that has been my favorite wake up alarm for the past year or so.
Yeah, that's also
so I was going to say, Matt, sorry, I generally don't like wearing anything on my wrist to bed, and that's why I had issues with, say, the Galaxy Watch 3, which I recently reviewed, which has better sleep tracking now, too. And that watch was chunky. So was it comfortable for you to wear the Apple Watch to bed? Yeah. Is it something you didn't do before and now you do?
So, yeah, I've never had really an issue with the bands annoying me, but I always wear either fabric or those quite cozy Apple plastic ones. They have a really,
the silicone.
They have a pretentious word for it, but I can't remember what it is. But yeah, I find them really comfortable. I forget I have it on a lot of the time until the battery runs out.
Okay.
But yeah, especially with these kind of stretchy, I know this is only really for the YouTube stream, but with these...
Oh, ASMR.
Oh yeah, sorry.
There you go. Velcro or...
Yeah, Velcro. Wait a minute, ready?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, I should not... can I do it without me making the creep noise?
Yes.
I didn't feel it when I was sleeping, but have you used an Apple Watch much, Cher? Have you tried?
Not very much, no.
It might be worth trying one, especially with Series 3 so cheap.
So yeah, so I am getting one in a little bit because, again, as our main wearables person, I need to have a good good knowledge of all of it. And Crucible Asco is giving me one. We've said that he's going to get me one for years, and he still hasn't handed me one. That's where we're at.
I'd be interested to hear your opinion, Cher. Yeah, can't wait.
Well, I think already just looking at what other reviewers have said of the WatchOS 7 beta, that the sleep tracking doesn't seem as in-depth or insightful as Fitbit or even Samsung's new one, where they use the heart rate.
Getting started, right?
It's very light.
They're looking at your heart rate to tell what zone of sleep you're in. And to me, that's actually a little bit more helpful because I have seen the Watch 3 measure up in terms of noting if I've been in REM or deep sleep. And deep sleep is just so much more restorative and helpful for your body overall. So to me, that's important. But then again, I don't want to wear a watch to bed, so it doesn't really matter that much to me.
I don't blame you. We talked a bit about this a couple of weeks ago, too. Is there any new hardware like you guys are looking forward to with the next Apple Watch?
Yeah. On the next Apple Watch, I don't know what you think, Matt, but I suspect they're going to catch up to the rest of the industry and add things like blood oxygen monitoring. I'm not sure if it already does that. I don't think so. But they did start the ECG trend. So now I think there's something else they're going to do with heart rate variancing or irregularities.
A feature which has saved lives. So, hey, that's
saved Chris Velasco's life.
Did it?
It did. I'll tell you later. But, Matt, what do you think?
Shame. So that's another crime.
He forgot to breathe.
So that's another crime to put against Apple. They saved Chris Velasco's life.
Yeah, that's their fault.
Thanks, Apple.
He's alive because of them.
Is there anything else we can expect from this event too? Because I feel like this time is like where's my 5G iPhone?
Yeah. So a lot of people were thinking this might be the iPhone event, but then based on the invitation, it seems more like the watch event and maybe an iPad because there's some scribbles in the background.
Sure.
Maybe a MacBook because
I hate how we have to read the tea leaves for the stupid thing. Like
maybe
take it to church. Spread
Devendra,
some holy water on
new hardware, so maybe the next Apple Watch Series 6 comes with a stylus.
Devendra hardware.
Hardware.
Oh my god, a stylus.
a stylus.
Ooh.
5G watch.
Like a James Bond stylus. That like retracts. There's also an assassination
needle. Comes out of the digital crown, you pull it out.
y'all
but
need
in all
to,
seriousness though
yes.
In all seriousness, the last gen, fifth gen, was barely there wasn't a design refresh because the fourth
series
was the big one. So six series is the one where we're expecting some actual hardware
changes.
Right, maybe it will have a makeover and a better battery life.
I'd love a bit of panels? I'm sure there's gonna be battery life improvements. The rumor is almost very likely that due to the beta that doesn't support it, there's not going to be force touch anymore, so you're not going to have that hard touch. So that's one thing out. So that means more space for battery.
I really like force touch.
But I'm also fine with just holding. Like force touch and holding for more than half a second are equivalent to me. I don't miss it too much. Yeah. The other thing is maybe they'll from some of the rumors, but I don't really believe them too much, they might completely redesign the digital crown. Did you hear about this, Cher?
Not yet. I actually haven't seen those rumors, but I wouldn't be surprised because Samsung's spinning bezel is doing really well, and the digital crown with interacting with the WatchOS 7 interface, it just looks like it's difficult. Like you have to
it's never been good. I wonder if they'll get rid of the crown, but like have some kind of like a swipey sensitive thing where you could just kind of.
They might make this is all speculation at this point, so we don't really know. I do want to point out that there's some other speculation and rumors going around about a second event in September or maybe a few weeks later that will more likely be the iPhone launch event. And were saying, according to some rumors, that instead of happening in the usual September timeframe, the iPhone event might happen later in October instead because of COVID-related production delays. That's the rumor.
I just want to take a vacation, guys.
I know.
A week where I could just like run away. It's not happening.
I already admitted that I'm not going to take a break until Thanksgiving. Like this is what's going to happen.
That's how it goes.
I want to quickly point out though, Matt.
Anything
else? Yeah, people on the podcast should know that there is also a live stream chat that we refer to during this show, and people in the chat are saying that blood oxygen apparently is on the Apple Watch Series 5. but no blood pressure yet, it seems.
Yes, that sounds about right.
Blood pressure is something that Samsung said it was going to do with the Galaxy Watch 3, and it is going to be in Korea, but it's pending regulatory approval here in the US.
And so it requires a strap, too. Like,
exactly.
It requires an actual,
it requires calibration
thing
with a blood pressure cuff. So
anyway,
we don't know what Apple is going to do, but Apple might be able to exert more pressure on things like the FDA to get that working. So we know.
Sounds good. Well, we'll see. We'll see more about Apple next week as we all scramble to cover.
Yeah, next
more
week's podcast will be
news.
All about Apple for sure.
Oh boy, yeah, it will be. And also, be sure to check out after the Apple event, we'll be doing a live stream just like this too. So it'll be me and Chris Velasco chatting about all the Apple news. So be sure to tune in for that. Matt Smith, thank you so much
for
joining.
Thank you. Sorry, I was a bit late to the party.
No.
It's all right.
You were fine. And also, dear listeners and viewers, if you enjoy hearing Matt's beautiful British voice, you can also tune in and check out the Engadget Morning Edition, which is a daily news show featuring our very own Matt Smith.
That's how I wake up, actually. That is my wake
your
up.
Your gentle
alarm.
Wake up.
Yeah. It's Matt's voice.
Matt reading
Matt
you.
Smith's ASMR wake up. Oh, my
it's
God.
Like, psst, psst. Wake up.
British wake up.
There was some Apple news overnight.
Wake up. Think about work immediately.
So let's move on to what we've been working on. I've been doing so much. I've been testing
we
so
all
many
have.
Things. Some graphics stuff. Yeah, I mean, we both have. Yeah. I've been testing some graphics stuff. I've been testing some VR stuff, and I cannot say specifically what either of those things are, but stay tuned over the next couple of weeks, and you'll see a lot of news from me on all of that. And also, yeah, I wrote up a thing, too, about the Xbox Series S and what a great value it is. So be sure to read that piece. We're going to have a video up on that soon, too. Sherlyn, what else have you been doing? You don't seem like you're working enough. Let me just say, you're not busy at all.
I know. Welcome to Sherlyn's weekly corner where she complains about too much work. And so this week has been all about the concurrently handling the Android 11 review and the Surface Duo review while also doing all of the other new stuff. It's been a ride. So yeah, check out the Android 11 full review. We kind of wanted to talk about it on the podcast today, but we had too much other new stuff come up. Plus, there's not really that much to say about the Android 11 review. If only
it
because
barely deserves a version number, it seems.
Yeah, I almost, like, my original review conclusion for that was like, this doesn't feel like Android 11. It feels like Android 10.5 is what I, you know, had in there. It's iterative. It's, you know, minor. And a lot of the changes you could disable if you don't like them, which is a good thing because a lot of them I didn't really like. But it still provides important, useful tools like built-in screen recording at last. I'm a bit of a stalker.
That's
so
one
that's
thing iOS did before Android. That's amazing.
Yes, yes. Wow. 100%. I can't believe that Apple beat them to the punch with that, but there you go. And then there's important like privacy setting features like one-time permissions and auto resetting of permissions for your apps, which is great. And then everything else is really about bubbles and conversations, notifications. So check out the review on Engadget.com. We also have a review video on the YouTube channel. But yeah, and then other things that we're working on. I thought I could get a sort of a break next week from the crushing workload, but no,
there is
we
no
have,
break.
There is
there
no
is
break.
No
there
break.
Is the Apple event. And then I just got late last night another embargoed review device coming. So yeah, that's that. And then next week we have a bunch more fitness devices to test. So there's y'all. You'll see me tweet
there's
a lot
so
about not sleeping, basically. That's what's going to happen.
I'm sure we'll be dealing with a bunch of stuff, too. Like, all the new hardware is coming eventually. Maybe we'll see the Xbox Series X. As we're recording this, I just saw some hands-ons go up, and now I'm just like,
where's our
I'm sitting
hands-on?
Here
yeah.
fuming and
mad.
Just like writing something to our PR person. So we're going to have something on all this stuff soon. Holiday gift guides, right?
Oh, exactly. That's so I was going to say, as if that wasn't enough, we're also in the middle of doing our prep work / early work for holiday gift guide. Can you imagine? It's already September and we're going to be getting ready to recommend you like things to buy for people that you won't be seeing for a while in person. So yeah, there's that. So yeah, if I'm not responding to people's emails, dear PR people, please be patient and understanding. Thank you.
Sherlyn's going to be busy playing solitaire for
also
8 hours
that.
Again.
That's only when I'm in the bathroom.
Let's move on to our pop culture
yes,
picks. And
relax.
As usual, Sherlyn, I'm going to let you kick it off, but I have no idea what you're choosing because you like to make this a secret. So
yeah, I think regular listeners know by now that I refuse to tell. I like to, for the reason I hold my recommendations is because I want Devendra's reaction real, like record it for posterity. So, okay, Dev, this isn't really my main recommendation, but one of it, one of the things I've watched recently for the first time, and you're going to be like, what the shit? This past weekend, I think I saw Red Dragon for the first time on Netflix. Which is the sequel prequel type thing to Hannibal slash The Silence of the Lambs.
You watch Hannibal? I forget.
I have seen Silence of the Lambs ages ago, but what I did after watching Red Dragon was then watch Silence of the Lambs again. So it was nice to see.
I see you're doing everything but watch the series I told you to watch.
True. I'm not watching anything.
You're doing everything but the thing I recommended
Do. Let's watch. Devendra said to watch this. I'll watch Red Dragon instead.
And you also went straight to the bad third movie. Have you seen Silence of the Lambs before?
Yes, I did. Yes. Okay. And then I rewatched it after Red Dragon.
Perfect movie. Yeah.
It's
so
a good movie. Love Jodie Foster. I think that's. Yeah, anyway. But okay, my real recommendation, which I send to one of our video producers every week to get the video ready for our live stream, and it's where I'm going to refer to now because I've forgotten why I've sent him. What I have is a running list of things I want to recommend, and then I pick them out every few weeks and I send them to Greg.
Sure.
This week I am recommending In the Shadow of the Moon. Have you seen that on Netflix?
I have not.
So it's a film that was released last year on Netflix. It stars, I think Michael C. Hall is one of the stars. And it's about like, it's about time travel sort of, but it's also weirdly timely, haha pun, because it's also about a bit of civil unrest and, you know, racial tensions and stuff like that. So the protagonist is this guy who his wife dies during childbirth because... And I don't think that's a spoiler, by the way. And his wife died during childbirth because he was chasing down this woman murderer who's on a killing spree. And the murderer seems to be doing something really strange, like how she's killing people. She's able to seemingly remote melt their brains. Like she's turning their brains into goo or blood.
Okay.
From a distance, and he's so he chases her and he realizes that she's actually traveling through time and he's chasing her through time. So I mean, it's not the best movie, but it has an interesting premise. And
I heard there's some stuff. I do want to shout out from the same director, Stakeland, which is a 2010 movie about vampire hunters, which kind of rules. It is a really cool indie vampire movie. Yeah, so check that out. I love Jim Mickle.
Yeah, you know I'm just not going to and watch other shit again.
Yeah, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to our listeners who are wise enough to listen to the things I suggest.
What are you watching? What are you going to recommend I watch this time around?
I would recommend people not watch the new Mulan remake.
Yeah, I already saw that. Sorry, bro.
It's not worth $30. It's a very pretty movie, but I think a very basic version of that story. I mean, in a weird way, they try to make it a more deeper Mulan type thing. But here's my thing. I think it's just a dumber crouching tiger. That's what they've turned that story into.
I just say that as a person who grew up in Asia, having watched so many different versions and interpretations of live drama, live action, Mulan in TV series form or in movie form, I definitely was hard for me to watch the Disney version, in part because it's quite a faithful adaptation of the cartoon, which is fine. Mm-hmm. There's like some real replications of scenes that were in the cartoon that I think those fans of that movie will enjoy. But there's,
and they took away some things talking animals.
And it took away talking animals for sure, and a lot of the crickets missing. But it also introduced some new characters that didn't feel like they totally fit in. The set pieces were great. The scenes looked beautiful. Mm-hmm. They've moved the setting from we call them like a courtyard style square house, and then they've moved it to like a round community housing village style, which is a very different province and a very different historical like setting. So for me, a lot of the period facts were a bit off, and I just was like, oh, this doesn't sit right with me. But if you don't really know the Mulan story the way I do, like the Chinese historical cultural way, this won't be that bad for you. But it's still not that great.
It's fine. But yeah, here's the thing, everybody. I think Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is one of the best movies ever made. It's fantastic. I've seen it many, many times. Ang Lee was actually the first person they tapped to do this remake, and he was just too busy. So I imagine his version would have been something a little more interesting, at least. My real shout outs, by the way, are just two movies I've seen. dozens of times over the past couple of months because my daughter, I feel like I've introduced her to these movies and she's latched on completely. So Sophia loves My Neighbor Totoro.
I saw her
dancing.
She
loves Kiki's Delivery Service. And we just watch them over and over and over again. But here's the thing. These movies are so good. I don't care because I love them so much. So I love every time I rewatch these movies with my daughter and seeing her get so into them. It just really reminds me of how great these things are, and the way movies connect with kids can be very different than, you know, the way I typically review movies. But I love these things. They're just fantastic. And yeah, I just want to say, like, these great movies, they're great. And they're also streaming on HBO Max right now with all the other Studio Ghibli stuff. Yeah. So you can watch them easily. You don't have to go roll out Blu-rays and DVDs like you used to. So yes, check those out if you haven't seen them yet.
And that's it for this week's episode, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at the /filmcast at /film.com. Also, podcasting about Legend of Korra at Republic City Dispatch. Just Google that.
If you want to send me a list of shows I'm definitely not going to watch, please tweet me at Sherlinlo on Twitter. Email us your thoughts and feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
But that's a very different Engadget podcast, Matt's feet. That's a completely different...